Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
Okay, today we're diving deep into a real literary giant. We're tackling Victor Hugo's Les Misérables.
Oh, it's monumental, isn't it? Published back in 1862, but wow, does it still resonate?
Absolutely. It's just this sprawling, incredible novel. If you're thinking about injustice, inequality, this book is still speaking directly to us.
It really is. And Hugo himself, well, he wasn't just some quiet author. He was a major public figure in 19th century France. Very political, part of that whole romantic movement.
Right. And he poured, what, 17 years into writing this?
17 years. A lot of it while he was actually in political exile, forced out of France. So you feel this immense passion behind it.
Definitely. He wasn't just telling a story.
No, not at all. It feels more like a manifesto in some ways. He was determined, absolutely determined, to give a voice to, well, the people society had crushed, the miserable ones, as he called them.
And the sheer scale is just staggering. I mean, if you've only encountered it through the musical, which is amazing, of course, you might miss the vastness of the novel. It covers almost two decades, doesn't it?
Yeah, from 1815, right after Napoleon's defeat, all the way up to the June Rebellion in Paris in 1832.
So it weaves together adventure, romance, history, and these really deep philosophical questions. It's got everything.
It truly does. The ultimate social epic.
Yeah.
But for our deep dive today, maybe we should focus on what really drives it. What's the core engine, the thing that sets everything in motion?
Good question. Okay, let's start at the very beginning then. Jean Valjean, where do we first meet him?
We meet him in 1815. He's just been released from the prison galleys in Toulon after 19 years.
19 years. And it was originally for what? Stealing a loaf of bread?
Just that. 5 years for stealing bread to feed his sister's starving child. But then the other 14 years were piled on for trying to escape, repeatedly, desperately.
So he comes out completely hardened, yeah. Bitter.
Utterly brutalized, filled with rage. And he's marked, legally, by this thing called the yellow passport.
Ah, the yellow passport. That's such a powerful symbol. It's not just ID, is it?
No, it's a brand, a social curse. It screams ex-convict to everyone. So even though he's technically free, society keeps him imprisoned. Every door slams shut in his face.
And it's in that state, totally broken and rejected, that he has this encounter that changes everything.
The encounter with Bishop Myriel, the Bishop of Digne, he's really the only person who shows Valjean any kindness, takes him in.
And Valjean repays him by stealing his silverware.
Exactly. He tries to run, but the police catch him almost immediately. They drag him back, probably expecting the bishop to demand punishment.
But the bishop, he does the complete opposite.
Flips the whole situation on its head. He tells the police the silver was a gift, lies to save Valjean. And then, incredibly, he insists Valjean take his two silver candlesticks as well. The only valuable things he had left, really.
It's more than just kindness. It's like a spiritual shockwave. And that line the bishop delivers.
Oh, it's the heart of the novel. Jean Valjean, my brother, you belong no longer to evil, but to good. It is your soul that I am buying for you. I withdraw it from dark thoughts.
That single moment, that act of radical grace, it just ignites Valjean's lifelong journey towards redemption.
It does. But, and this is Hugo's genius, that very act of grace immediately sets up the novel's core conflict. It brings Inspector Javert into the picture.
Javert, the antagonist, he represents the complete opposite philosophy, doesn't he? Absolute unbending law.
Precisely. And what's really interesting about Javert is his background. He wasn't born into privilege. He was born in prison. His mother was a fortune teller. His father, a galley slave.
So his whole life is a reaction against that, a rejection of chaos.
Exactly. He dedicated himself fanatically to order, to the law. For Javert, there's no nuance, no gray areas.
The criminal is always a criminal, full stop.
That's his rigid belief. So you have Valjean, who embodies the question, can a person truly transform? And Javert, who represents the system's answer, no.
Never. No. And that sets up this epic, decades-long chase. Hugo's basically asking us, the readers, right? Which path do you choose? Grace or this unforgiving system?
A profound question. So Valjean breaks his parole, vanishes. He takes a new name, Monsieur Madeleine.
And he actually succeeds, right? He becomes wealthy, respected.
Hugely successful. Uses a manufacturing innovation he learned in the galleys, builds a business, becomes a beloved mayor in this town, Montreuil-sur-Mer. He pours his energy into helping the poor. He's living proof that redemption is possible.
But the past always catches up, and Hugo immediately shows us the cost of the system, the suffering it inflicts. Which brings us to Fantine.
Ah, Fantine. Her story is just devastating, a real gut punch. She's a young woman, working class, abandoned by her wealthy lover.
And left with a daughter, Cosette.
Yes. And she gets fired from Valjean's Tir Madeleine's factory. Not by him directly, mind you.
No, it's one of his foremen, right.
Yeah.
Playing on the social prejudice against unmarried mothers.
Exactly. Vicious prejudice. And Fantine's descent after that is just horrific. She needs money to support Cosette, who she's left with these innkeepers.
Mm.
The Thénardiers.
The Thénardiers. We'll get to them. But they're demanding more and more money.
Extorting her, basically. So Fantine, driven by this desperate love for her daughter, starts selling everything. Her beautiful hair, then her front teeth, and finally her body. She becomes a prostitute.
It's such a powerful indictment of how society treated vulnerable women. Her motivation is so pure, just maternal love, but the consequences are hellish.
And her tragedy forces Valjean's hand. Javert is now the police inspector in the same town. He's suspicious of Mayor Madeleine.
And there's that incident with the cart, isn't there? Where Valjean shows incredible strength saving someone trapped underneath.
Yes. He lifts this incredibly heavy cart, and Javert sees it. He recognizes that strength. He remembers it from the galleys, from convict Jean Valjean.
But the real crisis comes when someone else is arrested, mistaken for Valjean.
And poor innocent man named Chamonix. Javert is convinced he's finally got the real Valjean. So Mayor Madeleine faces this terrible choice.
Stay silent, protect his new life, his good works, or reveal himself and save this stranger, losing everything.
It's a profound moral crossroads. Hugo spells it out. Valjean sees two duties, two paths, both seemingly straight, but utterly opposed.
And he chooses sacrifice. He goes to the court.
He confesses, gives up his freedom, his identity, his entire life as Madeleine to save Chamonix. It's the ultimate validation of the bishop's act of grace.
He gets arrested again, but escapes almost right away, doesn't he? To fulfill one last promise.
Yes. He finds Fantine on her deathbed. She's dying. And he makes this sacred promise to her. He will find Cosette. He will save her daughter.
So the focus shifts from the mother's tragedy to the child's hope. But Cosette's situation is terrible at first.
Oh, absolutely grim. She's with the Thénardiers, and they are just the embodiment of human cruelty and greed. Vile characters.
They treat her like a drudge, right? Abused, overworked.
Worse than a servant. She's their little slave, living in constant fear and misery. It's heartbreaking to read.
Until Valjean arrives. His appearance is described almost like a miracle, isn't it?
It really is. On Christmas Eve, no less. He essentially buys her freedom from those monsters, pays them off, and then the two of them flee together to Paris.
And they form this incredibly touching bond, like a father and daughter.
The most tender relationship in the book, maybe? They have to hide, live in secret. They eventually find safety for years inside the walls of the Petit Picpus convent.
Safe inside, but outside. The world is changing. Political tensions are rising.
Exactly. The story broadens now. We meet the next generation, and we get drawn into the political turmoil, especially through Marius Pontmercy.
Marius? His background is complicated, too, right? Raised by his grandfather, who is a staunch royalist.
Yes, Grandpa Gillenormand, a very rigid, old aristocrat. But Marius discovers that his own father, who he barely knew, was actually a hero under Napoleon. A colonel.
So that causes a huge shift in him. He rejects his grandfather's politics.
Completely. He embraces Republican ideals. He gets drawn into this circle of radical students, the Friends of the ABC.
Led by the charismatic Enjolras, they're all about revolution idealism.
Pure idealism. They represent the intellectual fervor of the time, this belief that they can remake society. It's quite stirring, but also you sense the danger.
And amidst all this political ferment, Marius encounters Cosette again.
Yes. He sees her during walks in the Luxembourg Gardens. She's grown up, beautiful now, though still very sheltered by Valjean, and Marius just falls head over heels in love.
Their romance is described as this sort of innocent idyll, right? A pocket of peace before the storm.
A perfect description. It's pure, almost dreamlike love set against this backdrop of rising tension that's about to explode.
And explode it does. June 1832, what triggers the uprising?
The death of General Lamarck. He was very popular, seen as sympathetic to the poor. His funeral becomes the spark. The barricades go up.
And Valjean, meanwhile, is getting nervous. He feels exposed.
Yes. The Thénardiers have resurfaced in Paris, operating as criminals now. Valjean fears they'll recognize him and Cosette. He decides they need to flee again, this time to England.
Which is devastating news for Marius.
Absolutely shatters him. He feels he's lost Cosette forever. So, heartbroken, full of despair, he decides to join his friends on the barricade. choosing what he thinks is a noble death. Martyrdom.
The barricade scene. It's where all the storylines just collide violently.
It's the climax, absolutely. And it brings in another key figure, Epone Thénardier.
The Thénardier's daughter. But she's very different from her parents.
Very different. She's grown up in poverty and crime, but she has this deep, unrequited love for Marius. It's tragic.
She follows him to the barricade.
She does, disguised as a boy. And in this incredibly selfless act, she sees a soldier aiming at Marius, and she throws herself in front of the musket.
Takes the bullet meant for him.
Dies in his arms. It's heart-wrenching. She shows that nobility, that capacity for love, can exist even in the most corrupted environments.
It's devastating. Meanwhile, Valjean finds out Marius is at the barricade.
Yes, he learns about Marius' love for Cosette and that he's in mortal danger. So Valjean goes there himself, not to fight the soldiers, but to protect Marius for Cosette's sake.
Another act of selfless love. And while he's there, he encounters Javert.
Javert has infiltrated the barricade as a spy. The student capture him, and they give Valjean the task of executing him, his lifelong enemy, delivered into his hands.
But Valjean doesn't kill him.
No. In perhaps the ultimate act of mercy, he takes Javert aside and lets him go secretly, frees him. It's an act that Javert simply cannot comprehend.
Mind-blowing for Javert's worldview. Then the barricade falls. The army wins.
It's a massacre.
Yeah.
But Valjean finds Marius, badly wounded, unconscious, and then comes that incredible escape.
Through the sewers of Paris?
Yes. Carrying Marius on his shoulders through that labyrinthine, foul underworld beneath the city. It's this nightmarish journey, a powerful symbol of wading through society's filth and decay to save a life.
They finally emerge from the sewer, and who's waiting for them?
Javert. Of course. He's there. Valjean doesn't resist. He just asks for time to get Marius home to his grandfather first.
And Javert lets him.
He grants him that time. But something inside Javert is broken. Valjean's mercy at the barricade, followed by this immense act of salvation. It's shattered his rigid code.
He can't reconcile it. The criminal acting with such profound goodness.
He can't. His black and white world has collapsed. If the law he serves can be less just, less merciful than the criminal he hunts, what does it all mean? He sees the law, applied without compassion, as potentially monstrous.
And he can't live with that contradiction.
No. Unable to adapt, unable to accept this new complexity, Javert walks to the River Seine and drowns himself, a victim of his own inflexible principles.
Wow. His death really feels like the thematic turning point. Grace overcomes the system in a way, but it destroys the system's embodiment. So how does it wrap up for Valjean, Marius, and Cosette?
Well, Marius recovers, thanks to Valjean. And he and Cosette get married. It seems like a happy ending is possible.
But Valjean feels he can't be part of it.
He feels his past, his identity as an ex-convict, would inevitably taint their happiness. So he confesses who he truly is to Marius. And then he just withdraws, prepares to die alone.
Which is so painful because Marius initially misunderstands, doesn't he? He still holds on to some prejudice.
He does. Despite everything, he accepts Valjean's withdrawal. He doesn't grasp the full depth of Valjean's sacrifice. It's a real moment of irony and sadness.
Until the truth comes out, and ironically, it's Thénardier who reveals it.
Yes, the villain himself. Thénardier tries to blackmail Marius, claiming Valjean is a murderer. But in doing so, he accidentally proves that it was Valjean who carried Marius through the sewers, saving his life.
A penny drops for Marius, horrified at his mistake.
Horrified, he and Cosette rush to Valjean's side, but it's very late.
They find him dying.
Yes. But he dies in peace, surrounded by their love. His long, arduous journey toward redemption is finally complete. And his last gesture, he points towards those two silver candlesticks.
The bishop's candlesticks. The symbols of that initial act of grace that changed everything.
Exactly. The beginning and the end of his transformation.
It brings us right back to Hugo's core message, doesn't it? This battle between justice or maybe harsh law and true mercy.
Absolutely. Hugo stated his purpose clearly. To expose the hells created when society condemns people, when it lacks compassion. Remember his preface. So long as ignorance and misery remain on earth, books like this cannot be useless.
It forces you, as a reader, to look past the labels, convict, prostitute, revolutionary, and see the person underneath, their struggles, their capacity for both good and evil.
The profound humanism is what makes it timeless. That idea may be best summed up in the line often associated with the musical, to love another person is to see the face of God, seeing the divine spark in everyone, especially the suffering.
So the real revolution Hugo seems to be advocating for isn't just overthrowing governments.
No, it's deeper. It's a moral revolution within each person. A commitment to choose kindness, to choose grace, even when it's incredibly difficult, even when the world seems overwhelmingly dark.
Ultimately, Les Misérables feels like this enduring challenge, asking us to measure ourselves and our society by how we treat the most vulnerable among us.
And it remains this powerful testament, I think, to how a single, unexpected act of grace can completely change the trajectory of a human life, steering it away from despair and towards redemption.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.